Welcome to Unity of Fairfax, a positive path for spiritual living and spiritual center for education, practice, and service in Northern Virginia. We hope you find inspiration in this week's message.
Wow, third week of Advent. The weather is in the 60s here in Northern Virginia. That's a rarity, but I have it on good authority that come Wednesday, it will feel very much like winter. So if you are in the area here, I hope you get out or wherever you happen to be, get out and enjoy the weather if it is suitable for doing that. So here it is, third week of Advent, where the theme is love. I'm wearing my pink shirt. I have my love tie on. I don't know if you can see it. I sometimes tie one on before church, kind of takes the edge off. Boom, boom. It's funnier in person. Anyway, so theme is love, and the character, the personage at Christmas time that most symbolizes love would be Mary, the mother of Jesus. And there's often a big emphasis on Mary, and especially in the music. One of my favorite songs that we sing often at Christmas time or here is the song "Mary, Did You Know" by Mark Lowry. And interestingly enough, I saw Mark Lowry in concert once. I was in Kansas City, and he explained in the concert that this was actually an Easter song, but for whatever reason, found purchase at Christmas time. And then there's another song, "The Beautiful Breath of Heaven," that ain't by Amy Grant. It's a beautiful song, and of course there's the traditional "Silent Night" that references Mary, and of course, what Christmas service would be complete without the Franz Schubert song "Ave Maria," which interestingly enough was composed for an opera not at all related to Christmas. So that's the syncretic nature of Christmas. It just adds things to it, and we have this wonderful symbol of Mary. Now, if we look metaphysically at the themes of Christmas, we can say that each character in the story represents a divine idea. And in this case, Mary represents the divine idea of love. Joseph represents the divine idea of wisdom. And the product, when you bring love and wisdom together, is Christ consciousness, symbolized by the person Jesus. We take this one step further in unity and in new thought by recognizing that each one of us, every single one of us, whether we know our parentage or not, regardless of whether or not our earthly parents were truly inspired, each one of us at our core is the product of divine love and divine wisdom. Each one of us at our core is an individualized representation of Christ consciousness. So throughout our New Thought teachings, and especially at Christmas time, we honor the realization and the rediscovery and the rebirth of that knowing for ourselves. Because when we know the truth of who we are, that each one of us at our core is the product of love and wisdom, then we are empowered to express and demonstrate the Christ and live life as the Christ and follow that model, the great example that we have, and go out into the world and make a difference and proclaim the kingdom and demonstrate the kingdom and realize, make real the kingdom. And by that, we're talking about a world that works for everyone. So Christmas symbolizes a rebirth in consciousness, but also a rededication to be active in the world. Unfortunately, though, wisdom is not an Advent theme. So maybe next year, Amy, we'll do 5 weeks of Advent and throw in wisdom so Joseph gets a little more than just a cameo appearance. But that's a different talk for a different day. So here's a question for us all to consider as we're looking at the gift-giving and delivery due dates and deadlines. Would we like to give and receive the gift of divine love at Christmas? And if so, what would that look like? How would we experience it? How would we know we had given it or received it? Well, I hope you said yes to that question, because that's what my talk's about. So anyway, and the good thing about it is this gift of divine wisdom does not require an Amazon Prime membership, nor do you have to ship it via UPS, FedEx, or the United Postal Service, or the United States Post Office. However, the gift of divine love is conveyed person to person. whether that's in person in a gathering or virtually or through knowing of our cosmic oneness and interconnectedness. So Jesus, whose birth we're celebrating, did say a lot about love. And I want to share with you a short story out of the book of Mark, chapter 12. And it goes like this. One of the teachers of the law, it always comes back to lawyers, one of the teachers of the law came and heard them debating. Noticing that Jesus had given a good answer, he asked them, "Of all the commandments, which is the most important?" "The most important one," answered Jesus, "is this. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, and with all your mind and with all your strength. The second is this. Love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these." I mean, Jesus is just laying it down. This is bottom line, folks. Brass tacks. This is all you need to know. "Well said, teacher," the man replied. "You are right in saying that God is the one and that there is no other but him. To love him with all your heart and all your understanding and all your strength and to love your neighbor as yourself is more important than all the burnt offerings and sacrifices." When Jesus saw the man answered wisely, he said to him, "You are not far from the kingdom." From then on, no one dared ask any more questions. I'm curious, and I really leaned into this idea this year of why did nobody dare ask any questions beyond that? Because when the scene opens, there's a debate going on, and apparently a lot of ideas are being shared, but suddenly they were all shut down when Jesus told this man, "You are close to the kingdom," and nobody dared ask any more questions. And I think the reason why nobody dared ask any more questions, or at least the reason why Mark wrote it that way, because they were debating the fundamentals, the very basics of their faith that girded everything that they did. And what they knew and what our scriptures show consistently is that this person, Jesus, that we read about would not abide or excuse or enable or justify attitudes of superiority or exclusivity. He is recorded on many occasions to have called people out on their stuff. And I guess the people in that audience did not want to be called out. You know, a reading of the words ascribed to Jesus indicate that the need to be right, to be superior, to hold power, to gain wealth, or to even maintain victimhood would get no support from him. It is clear in his teaching that all of these things would prevent one from entering the kingdom. And really, what is the kingdom of God? What are we talking about if not a lived, very conscious experience of open-heartedness, generosity, and inclusivity? They didn't want to argue exceptions. As Jesus was real clear, there are no exceptions. You love or you don't. You're in the kingdom or you're not. This is hard to fathom for us, especially in some of the times that we're in. But the message is powerful. It is powerful. Then in another instance in the Sermon on the Mount, he gives a demonstration of what we're talking about living this love as a conscious, lived experience. When he says, "You have heard it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you." Gee whiz, that is not easy. Is it? It's almost counterintuitive. It kind of reminds me of something Abraham Lincoln once said when he said, "Do I not destroy my enemies when I make them my friends?" So how do we do this work of loving our enemies? This is where the pedal meets the metal. So how do we do this? We declare love on them. We declare love initiative. Crazy as that sounds, isn't it? Especially in the days in which we live. But it is precisely because of the times in which we live that this message and this divine idea of love and this Advent theme is so important. We declare love on our supposed enemies. I'll say supposed because I don't believe we have them. By affirming that their needs are met without harm to anyone and without theft to anyone else. May all beings have their needs met. And we pray for those who yank our chains and push our buttons, the exact same things we would want for ourselves. Especially if we don't want to do that, if we want to stay in our rage and in our fear, we are called to a higher standard. We call there is a Christ consciousness being reborn in us, not a reaffirmation of our victimhood or our lower standing and belief systems. Because ultimately, this divine love that we are giving will all come back to us. There is a law of compensation and circulation. Whatever you put out will come back to you. Maybe not as you expect or when you want it. It comes back. So that's our homework for this week. Giving it to you early in the message. Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. You know, these could be people in your family, in your community, in your homeowners association, or maybe the people you read about in the paper and on your news feeds. I have to lean into this one myself because I've seen some folks in my news feed of late. I don't really want to pray for them. I just want them to go away. Or do I? When I get down and get still and connect with the truth of my being and who I've come here to be, I want everybody to be happy. I want everyone to be at peace. I want everyone to be healthy and free of this pandemic. That's what I want, because healthy people, happy people work together for the common good and are free from that consciousness of separation. And when I start seeing that consciousness of separation in myself, I realize, Russell, boy, you got some work to do. Let's go back to revisit what you were preaching yesterday, or to anybody who will listen. Yeah. See, both the Jesus of Scripture and the awakened Christ consciousness make an imperative of love. There is no justification given for hanging on to greed or resentment or victimhood or any unloving act or deed. You know, I've wanted to be one of those arguing scholars of the law, trying to find a way out to cling on to my sense of moral superiority. It's not there. It's not there. And it's not there for a reason. Because we are all better than that. And this isn't rocket science. But it does require us to surrender our long-held or recently developed images of us versus them, or me versus you, or liberals versus conservatives, or whatever you want to put in there and fill in the blanks. Oh my, let's just breathe for a moment. It's a good thing Maura led us in meditation today. Because there's more. I mean, this idea of this moral imperative love is huge. Maybe that's why it has its own special color to highlight. Hey, this is a big area of working. It's almost as if on our Advent wreath, God took a highlighter and just kind of highlighted the loved one, made it pink. What I'm really talking about next as an aspect and an important part of this experience of love, of divine love, is forgiveness. There are several definitions given. of forgiveness. One from Shirley Glass is, forgiveness is letting go of the need for revenge and releasing negative thoughts of bitterness and resentment. Or one of my favorites, forgiveness means giving up all hope for a better past. There you go, just let it go. It happened, whatever it was, there you have it. But interestingly, ironically, forgiveness is ultimately a gift we give ourselves. Because in the forgiveness process, it frees our life energy for constructive purposes. And by that, I mean we're not wasting our life energy clinging to resentment and grudges and victimhood. Because when we do that, we just cling to a hurtful experience. We take our life energy that could be used in so many more constructive ways and tie it to the past and put cement shoes on it and tell it to go swimming. Forgiveness frees us because they may want to do it again. So we set ourselves up for a different experience. So it's really important, therefore, that we understand what forgiveness is not. Oh, and I just want to highlight here that this doesn't necessarily mean releasing the need or the call for justice or an acknowledgement of what happened. Because justice can be restorative rather than punitive. But that's a different talk for a different day. We're just getting in our hearts with it today. So it's important to know what forgiveness is not. So forgiveness is not pretending it didn't happen, whatever it was, because it did happen. And we need to retain the lessons learned without holding on to the pain. Because when we retain the lesson without the pain, we get wisdom. When we keep the lesson and the pain, we have victimhood. It's a very different experience. Secondly, forgiveness is not excusing. We excuse a person who is not to blame. We forgive because a wrong was committed, and we acknowledge this was a wrong, and we choose to have a different reaction to it, a response rather. Forgiveness is not giving permission to continue hurtful behaviors, nor is it condoning the behavior in the past or in the future. And sometimes when we do this forgiveness, we just have to remove the victim and step away from the situation entirely. But it is not saying, oh, I'm sorry, let's do it again. Oh, I'm sorry, do it again. Oh, I'm sorry, do it again. That's not it. And it's not allowing that behavior to go on into the future. And interestingly enough, forgiveness is not reconciliation. These two things are often considered together. They can be related. They don't have to be related. Reconciliation, because we have to make a separate decision about whether to reconcile with the person we are forgiving or the situation, or whether to maintain our distance. Reconciliation is not required, and in some places, it is not even recommended. Sometimes it's just better to keep that distance. But you've done your forgiveness work, so you can go on. There's really no one way to do forgiveness, to give this gift and feel into this attribute of divine love, but there are some steps I've found to be helpful. There are many resources available about this. And Jesus spoke often of the need for forgiveness. You know, when asked, how many times do I have to forgive? Seven times? And he goes, no, 70 times, seven times. Basically saying, if you're going to have a physical body, chances are you're going to have some reason to forgive something. And some things can be forgiven easily and quickly. Some take a considerable amount of effort. Oh, and by the way, I've already given your homework assignment to pray for, your enemies and those you don't really care for. If you want extra credit, do some forgiveness work. I tell you, if you turn in your papers, I'll give you a star by your name so you get extra credit this week. So here's some ways to do forgiveness. Well, first of all, we acknowledge what happened, whatever the painful experience was, the feelings behind it, and the results of that experience. And we acknowledge those to ourselves first, because sometimes we don't even want to admit that it happened. But it's imperative that we do. And to a trusted party. To receive sacred witness to our life experiences. Even better if the offender or the guilty party is able to bear witness to your experience. Maybe they can, maybe they can't. But the important thing for you is to acknowledge this happened. This happened. Another attribute of forgiveness is to be willing, anyway, to understand or try to understand the point of view and or the motivations of the guilty party or the situation. What was going on? What led them to that behavior? It may mean you're able to replace anger with compassion, or in the very least, add compassion to your anger. So the experience becomes a little richer, a little fuller. Because one thing we know about consciousness, we can know two seemingly contradictory feelings at the same time. And if we can add a positive with a negative, then we can reduce the energetic charge and move on closer to healing from an experience. Another aspect of forgiveness, which may or may not be applicable in whatever situation you're considering, is to be willing to forgive yourself for any role you may have played intentionally or inadvertently in a situation. Sometimes, not always, sometimes the victim did have a role in the creating of the experience. And this is not about blaming the victim, ever. But it's simply about acknowledging, where was I in this equation? And then we make a decision as to whether or not to remain engaged with the parties involved in this situation. Sometimes through forgiveness work, this can happen. Sometimes the other party or parties, the situation or the institution will acknowledge, we did wrong. Well, okay. It is up to you to decide if or when to re-engage. You certainly don't have to, but it's an option. And lastly, it is, I think, helpful to engage or perform some sort of symbolic act of release, of letting go of the experience. Nobody has to know you've done this except yourself. Something that says to you, I'm done. I'm moving on. One of the ways that happens often at New Year's time is through a burning bowl experience, and we'll have a form of that this year on New Year's Eve, where we release and let go what we don't want to carry into the new year. I, for one, have a lot of things from 2020 alone that I will be releasing. We can all do that. So as we draw these ideas to a close today around this Advent theme of love, there are really two points I've asked you to consider. The first is that willingness to be a conduit of love. By being willing to love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. This is tremendous work. And it's doable. And we are called to do it. I think this wonderful meditation that Mara led us in today, this body of energetic love that we are, we carry it with us. Wow! What if everybody did that consciously? What impact would that have? What if we all remembered as we went about our day, I am love incarnate, sharing and spreading the energy of love in the world, just by my very being. It would probably spread faster than a virus. And secondly, let's consider also engaging in the forgiveness process. These things are a lot of work. And I tell you, if you will be willing to do the work, then be willing to receive the rewards. And the greatest reward that comes back to us is peace of mind. Into knowing that we have done something helpful to restore broken places in ourselves and in the world. Because love is that glue that restores and reconnects Love is that attractive power that draws people together, that draws souls together that may have been broken so that they might know wholeness and that the world might know wholeness and that divine idea of oneness and unity. So that as the angel says, peace on earth, goodwill to all, we will know we are all co-creating that together. I often like to find short, pithy phrases and sayings and quotes that will help me to remember the truth that I hold dear. And so I'm going to close this talk today, appropriately enough, with a line out of William Shakespeare's play, All's Well That Ends Well. And I think that in just 9 words, the Bard of Stratford has summed up what this talk is about, when he said, love all, trust a few, do wrong to none. Peace be with you. Namaste.
Thank you for tuning into Unity of Fairfax podcast. You're welcome to join us live in Oakton, Virginia, every Sunday at 9 and 11 a.m., or view our live stream services from our website at unityoffairfax.org. We appreciate your donations to support this podcast to make our message of positive, practical spirituality more accessible to all. See you next time.